From SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, this is Coronavirus, everything you need to know now.
From the Emergency Medicine Show, here's Dr. Billy Goldberg.
Dr. Howard Griller is here.
Hey.
You know him as Ho-Gee. I know him as Ho-Gee.
Indeed.
He's Ho-Gee.
I am.
Dr. Darian Sutton Ramsey is wearing a hat.
Whoop, whoop.
Special hat.
Good morning.
And on the line, we have Dr. Andrew O'Hagan, who is the Director of Emergency Psychiatry at Maimonides Hospital in Brooklyn, New York, a friend of Dr. Howard Griller's. They used to work together.
Yeah.
And now a friend of all of ours.
Indeed.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. Good morning to your studio. Pleasure to speak with you, Dr. Darian and Billy and Howard. Big fan of the show.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much.
So a little bit about myself and why I wanted to come and chat with you guys. By background, I'm actually a psychiatrist.
How do you feel about that?
I'm an emergency psychiatrist. You know, one of the things that is so important and everybody is worried about in, I think, in medicine on the whole is the secondary trauma from COVID that certainly healthcare providers are exposed to, and the long-term risks of a mental health pandemic that may follow sequentially with the COVID crisis. So I wanted to come in and chat with you guys a little bit about that.
Can you do us a favor? Because I don't know if our listeners really get it about what an emergency psychiatrist does.
Sure.
So I think we've mentioned here that occasionally we have a colorful crowd who comes into the ER, and they a lot of psychiatric illness, and we need help from our colleagues sometimes. So tell me about emergency psychiatry to start off with.
So there are a lot of ports of entry to getting mental health care. I am, as a director of a hospital-based service here in New York City, my responsibilities include consultation to other services, particularly emergency medicine, as to whether a patient is experiencing what they would call a primary mental illness like depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, substance-related illness, to assess the level of risk that the patient may have at any given point in time. Most mental illnesses in America are treated by primary care physicians or psychiatrists in offices or in clinics. But now and then, we have people that hit an emergency room that are in acute crisis, and they need to stay in a hospital for a variety of reasons, either for medical care or acute psychiatric care. So an emergency room psychiatrist is involved in the triaging and assessing of risk and pathology, and to really help answer questions from other services. So that's kind of the bread and butter of what I do. I need to know psychiatry, certainly, but I also have to be able to speak the language of internal medicine doctors and emergency medicine doctors, because sometimes patient care, as we all know, can be very confusing, and people have a variety of certainly medical and mental health problems, but also sociological and psychological problems. And my job is to see how to best help those folks. Do they need to stay in a hospital, or can they be referred somewhere?
So where you work, do you have a psychiatric ER here at NYU? I work at NYU, and I work at Bellevue. Bellevue actually has a separate psychiatric ER, which is a locked unit, and people can go there. Here at NYU, we actually do not have that. We try to create a separate area, but that's tricky because space is a premium. But we do have a psychiatrist, and this is a relatively new thing here, who's based in the ER.
Nice.
So how do you guys do it where you're at?
At Maimonides, we do not have a CPEP, which is essentially primarily a New York-based phenomenon of sort of an augmented psych ER with a variety of level services, including something called mobile crisis, where social workers go out into the community to assess patients that's connected to the CPEP. Maimonides does not have a CPEP. We have a fairly robust psychiatric emergency room that is cordoned off with some degree of isolation that's fully staffed with physicians and nurses and effectively functions as close to being a CPEP as possible. And we're a fairly, I would say, a moderately robust service. Bellevue service is probably number one or number two in New York City. We're smaller than that. We did about a little under 5,000 visits in 2019.
So CPEP is Comprehensive Psychiatric Emergency Program. It's a term we use here in New York. I hadn't heard it anywhere else. Yeah. Andrew, I want to talk about, before we get into the healthcare worker thing, which is a big thing in the whole PTSD, which is I really think we need to discuss, I've noticed, and especially lately at work, that we're seeing more psychiatric people. So the people who are vulnerable are being I think they have less access to resources. They're more stressed by what's going on. What were you seeing at the peak of the crisis, and what are you seeing right now in terms of psychiatric illness?
What was interesting, and this is, I know this has probably been a discussion for you guys, is how at the peak of the crisis, ER volumes across New York City for all sorts of pathology dropped precipitously. We saw that at Maimonides, where things really, really slowed down considerably. But the people coming in the door were very sick psychiatrically. So less volume, but higher acuity. You know, there are the interesting phenomenon is that usually the patients that hit an emergency room, as a gross generalization, are very psychiatrically sick or chronically sick. So the question I always have on my mind is this new or is this a chronic process? These are people with schizophrenia and severe bipolar disorder. They have lack of psychosocial support, so they don't have stable housing or economic impairment that can be severe. They can be homeless. So that's the bread and butter of ER psychiatry in a large city. Increasingly, you know, we are starting to see a trickle of patients coming in that don't fit into that stereotype as neatly. And this is highly concerning for me. These are folks that are functional and have jobs and have a stable place to live and have become psychiatrically more symptomatic, or they have new onset symptoms because of COVID. So I would say overall that volume is slowly picking up. The acuity is going up dramatically, and we're starting to see this trickle of people that are not typically seen in an emergency room.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So my story I was going to tell is I was at Bellevue on Tuesday, and I knew that things were getting back to normal when it was about 10 o'clock, and there was probably about a 45 to 50-year-old gentleman, shaved head, some tattoos, wearing just socks and a diaper, kind of putting his hands up in the air, doing a little dance. Yeah. And, you know, he is a guy who shows up often, can be a little violent, often is intoxicated, has some psychiatric illness. I said, you know, nothing described Bellevue better than the grown man in a diaper dancing. But that's the kind of stuff that we see on a regular basis. And I just feel like we're seeing more of it now, at least proportionally to the other stuff that we see.
Yeah. My shift yesterday, I was walking through, and Andrew, you remember the high side bed space 17, there was a gentleman who was there being evaluated and who was standing on the stretcher, standing up on the stretcher, and he was very, very tall, probably 6'2", 6'3", screaming at the top of his lungs, "I'm not sick, I'm not sick," and then proceeded to urinate off the stretcher onto the floor. So
sounds about right.
A code yellow.
Yeah. He was wearing the yellow gown, too. So
Andrew, let's talk about healthcare workers a little bit. And Darian, you know, so it's been a stressful time for a lot of us. Darian has an interesting question for you to kind of kick it off.
I just want to say, first off, thank you. I feel like we have so many times where they call everyone in the ER heroes, but there's so many unsung heroes. And as I know, as an emergency physician, having the help of an emergency psychiatrist has been more than helpful in every day of my life, pre and post pandemic. But a lot of people have been asking me what things I do at home to keep myself sane. And I pose the question to you as a psychiatrist, what things do you do at home to keep yourself together during this unsure time?
Full disclosure, when this started evolving, there was sort of from my own experience, it was sort of a numbing process. I think one of the things everybody has to contend with is that this is this evokes a lot of existential angst. And there's tremendous uncertainty that we're all struggling with day to day. I think knowing the emergency medicine temperament of not just physicians, but nurses, PCTs, mental health workers, security, is that there's a sense of mastery and control that is very appealing in healthcare in general. I think that is a powerful thing, but also can cause injury when there are things that are outside of one's locus of control. I think one of the things that's important is to focus on mastery and core values and during a time of crisis like this. What has meaning for you? I think the basic good health ADLs that are so important for all of us, eating well, exercising, sleeping when appropriate, avoiding substance use as much as possible, those are even more important. But one of the things that, again, I think can cause trouble for healthcare workers and also the population on the whole is the isolation one feels when not working, perhaps, when they're restricted to being at home. our teams, one of the things that came up is when staff became symptomatic with COVID or had potential exposure, the downtime of being at home, the guilt and mixed feelings about being at home or being isolated, and then the returning to work when folks got better was incredibly empowering. I think people feel better often at work. They have routine, but they also have colleagues, hopefully, that they can lean on. At least where I work, I've been very impressed with people's ability to lean on each other. It's also very important in healthcare systems that they create a system of care for the employees. Maimonides, until very recently, you know, we are a larger hospital, but we're a community hospital. We didn't have employee-based resources. So we had to invent that in the past 6 weeks. We started an employee-based mental health clinic. With the EM department, I've been doing process groups where people can sort of vent in a safe place and discharge some of the things that they've been experiencing. On the other units, we've been going around just checking in with nurses on med-surg floors and residents and assorted non-ER staff. So we sort of had to invent an operationalized process for this, which is something that was new for Maimonides.
Yeah, all these things apply to everybody, even outside of medicine. You have to, you know, reach out to people, talk to people, keep up with the healthy things in your life. It's so important.
One of the things that is advantageous is, of course, and everybody's talking about, is technology, that we can socially distance and use things like Skype and Zoom to have social interactions. Are they perfect social interactions? No, but they are enough, hopefully, that they can sort of compensate for the pain and suffering people may be feeling. Even by phone, you know, calling a loved one, those things are super important. Attending to each other, both at work and at home in the communities that we live in, is so important.
Hey, Andrew, I have a question for you. So you mentioned the stereotype of ER doctors, kind of this control. I've always said we kind of have this high-functioning attention deficit disorder. We're a little bit all over the place. What is the stereotype of the psychiatrist? And yes, that is a leading question.
Sure. Well, I think from your guys' perspective, we tend to say, oh, it's a medical problem. That's how we get stereotyped. That it's delirium until proven otherwise is sort of the crude stereotype of an ER psychiatrist. Again, this is why it's so important to be thoughtful, to communicate up with other people. Well, I spend a lot of my time reading charts, talking to non-psychiatric colleagues. In some ways, you know, again, what attracted me to mental health in the first place was people are not so clearly cut. We try to diagnose illnesses, but they don't fully encapsulate the individual. And that can be a really difficult thing for people that don't work in mental health to fully grasp.
Would you say that psychiatrists are a quirky bunch?
Oh, absolutely.
So that's kind of what I was getting at. So the joke is, you know, it's like birds of a feather flock together. That they're.
Sure. What I was alluding to with ER, and I think it's applicable to all healthcare practitioners, is we want to do good. One, for a sense of altruism, but also it feeds some internal gratification and narcissistic perceptions of oneself. Like, I am a good person, I do good work. And that's not a bad thing. But in this time, that can be a vulnerability and predispose people to something called narcissistic injury, when they may feel more like they failed. They weren't able to do things that they should have been able to do. And this is a perception that doesn't necessarily reflect reality. And I think, you know, again, I'm picking a little bit on ER docs. I think that's across all healthcare providers.
We all felt narcissistically injured during this. So I totally get it.
For sure.
I actually get that. That makes a lot of sense.
I think the medical model is see a problem, fix a problem. But I think it's really hard to use that as a framework when there are a lot of things out of your control. So it's obviously been a very difficult time for all of us. As a psychiatrist, I'm a little bit more comfortable with that there are things that I can't control, because my goal is to steer someone towards a treatment, but the element of free will does come into play, and people often make poor choices.
This goes across the board. It leaves medicine. It's in politics. It's in, you know, everybody wants things to be perfectly clear, and I think more and more we need to talk about the uncertainty and get more comfortable with the uncertainty of life, because then we won't be dissatisfied all the time when things don't work out as planned.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And one of the things I think that can help people feel better about this psychologically is exercise altruism and to try and be kind and attend to values that are important to you. Not only does that make all of us individually feel better, but you know, in terms of the community, people feel more comfortable with things.
Bravo.
Try to be kind. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Get facts, not fear, from SiriusXM's Dr. Radio, presented by the leading experts from NYU Langone Health. To learn more about Dr. Radio, including shows and schedules, go to SiriusXM.com/Dr. Radio.